So I believe Yeshe is our leader tonight. So I will turn it over to you.
Oops, I'm muted, it says.
Now you're good.
Huh. How come it's on my side? It says I'm muted, but I'll believe you. Okay. So, homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, tonight the class is on anger. And I'm using primarily Robert Aiken's The Mind of Clover, O'Hara's Most Intimate, Rossetto's Waking Up to What You Do, a little bit from Bhikkhu Bodhi's Noble Eightfold Path, and a twinge of Kjogen Carlson and Gyoko Carlson. So Bodhidharma said, self nature is subtle and mysterious in the realm of the selfless Dharma. Not contriving reality for the self is the precept of not indulging anger. Dogen Zenji, not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is a boundless sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. I've come to love this precept. I actually originally wrote up this class in freeform verse, and I wrote a few haikus, but I figured now I better get some quotes in here. So now maybe I've overdone the quotes, but anyway, that's the new way. So one of the most animating emotions, anger is also one of our more controversial emotions. Roshi O'Hara in Most Intimate says, quote, "On the one hand, anger can be a positive force that signals danger. It gives us energy to react and a sense of control over our situation and response. On the other hand, anger can lead to impulsive aggression, confusion, or even complete shutdown," unquote. We need anger. It's a very dynamic energy with many ways to be expressed. Carla McLaren, an emotional genius, refers to anger as, quote, "the honorable sentry," unquote, and notes anger includes rage, fury, and the masking state of apathy. She says the internal questions for anger are what must be protected and what must be restored, unquote. Whether we indulge anger with expression or repression, or stew in a continuous simmer of anger with no direction, we have inappropriate boundaries. McLaren says repressive anger, which is imploding, anger denied or directed inwardly, leads to energy loss, enmeshment, apathy, self-abandonment, and depression. Overtly expressive anger leads to cycling rages that create harsh and unhealthy boundaries, hatred and prejudice, and isolation. This precept does not say do not have anger. We all have moments of self-centered thinking. We don't like to chant. We nag our kids to do their homework, complain to our loved ones for not doing the dishes, not putting the cap on the toothpaste, not speaking up, not knowing how to get where we want to go. We fume about the recklessness of politicians and news reporters. We get frustrated with repeatedly washing our hands, having to wear masks, not having enough masks and PPE. Standing on lines to shop and then not finding what we came for. We get angry about being sheltered at home, about losing employment. We get angry about not being able to be with a dying loved one. This precept asks us to examine our relationship with anger, to pause and reflect on the demands we place on others and situations before we take action. How we relate to anger is what determines if we're moving towards clarity and wisdom or towards more confusion and suffering. This precept includes cultivating equanimity. And Domi, is it possible to break up into groups for just like 4 minutes or not? Domio?
Yeah,
Is
you
it
can. We can do
possible?
that.
So just about three people in a group, because it's going to be short, just about 4 minutes. And so what I'd like you to do before you go into your groups is to just check in with your beliefs about anger and how you handle anger. Am I talking or someone else?
You're good.
Okay. I hear someone else talking. That's why I wasn't sure. Paraphrasing Rosetto and O'Hara, are you afraid expressing anger will show weakness? Do you cower in fear in the face of anger? Do you think that in any situation, anger is unspiritual, wrong, dangerous, or should just be squelched at its earliest signal? Do you stuff it, cling to it, avoid it, ignore it, deny it until you're shut down or it's released on some naive passerby? Do you think anger should be hidden in a closet like a lunatic? Do you wear anger as a don't mess with me armband to convey an arrogant sense of power and strength? Are you an exploding volcano the instant you sense anger? Is anger yours or someone else's? So those are just a few things. And just like if groups of three for about 4 minutes.
Okay, just give me 1 minute because we were in bigger groups before, so I can't just reform.
Okay, well, you can do bigger groups. That's okay. I just figured if 4 minutes, they're not going to have everyone's. Do whatever you want, but only like, I didn't time this, sorry to say, so I don't know how long I really have.
Okay, that's no problem. I'm sure we'll be fine. So I think I got some decent sized, one group of four. So I will invite y'all to
listen, worry, and five, doubt. In Noble Eightfold Path, Theravadan monk Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote, quote, the hindrances block the path to liberation. They grow up and over the mind, preventing calm and insight, the primary instruments for spiritual progress. Sensual desire representing greed and ill will representing aversion are the most formidable hindrances. Ill will comprises hatred, anger, resentment, repulsion of every shade, whether directed towards other people, towards self, towards objects, or towards situations. Phew. Anger sounds like something to eliminate from our lives immediately if we want to mature or have any spiritual growth. But Bodhi continues, we are not to deny the senses, which is impossible, even if it could be achieved. For the defilements lie in the mind, not the sense organs or objects. Bodhi is very clear, anger itself is not the problem. Exploring our relationship to anger releases the succulent fruits of wisdom. So we don't want to stuff or deny anger. Doing so is a form of self-indulgence in anger. Rosetto, quote, some of us get the message early in life or later that anger in others and ourselves is unacceptable. Many of the religious isms, including Buddhism, can be practiced in such a way as to suggest that if we experience anger, we are not enlightened, unquote. Yet the more you strategize to push anger away, for example, avoiding confrontation, obsessively planning, making jokes, keeping expressionless, having no opinion, to maintain attachment to have others think well of you, or to maintain a delusion of perfection, you create a form of self-imprisonment. Rosetto, the more we try to deny it, the more likely dishonesty, either to ourselves or others, will enter into the situation, unquote. Yet smearing and punishing others with expressive or explosive anger is equally a form of grandiosity and is contrary to keeping this precept. So what's the origin of self-indulgent anger? In our youth, in our youth, when our innocence and preciousness are threatened, we do our best with unsophisticated strategies, crying, yelling, fighting, imploding, exploding, etc., to preserve and protect our vulnerable selves. Having forgotten that we already are complete and whole, and also having forgotten the impermanence of each moment, we create an illusory self that spins an endless stream of delusions, stories, to protect our vulnerability, to give our lives meaning amidst confusion. Yet in our forgetfulness of who we really are, we petrify in a cocoon of self-indulgence spun from comparing mind, judging mind, blaming mind, denying mind, massacre mind, etc. Remember, we are doing our best to preserve our tender selves with genuine but unsophisticated means to show self-care. Life-centered anger develops from a healthy relationship with anger, where anger's energy flows freely through us as needed, with no attachment to self. McLaren says, quote, "The gifts of anger are proper boundaries, healthy detachment, conviction, and protection of self and others," unquote. Without a healthy relationship with anger, we might not have the self and respect and energy we need to remove ourselves from abusive situations. Life-centered anger is like, or to me, it's like rocket fuel that propels us to animate life in a productive and constructive way, to speak out and act affirmatively when there are injustices against ourselves and other beings, individually or collectively, or the planet itself. So let's look at Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma said, "Self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the selfless Dharma, not contriving reality for the self is the precept of not indulging anger." In the Sensing Ming, and Faith of Mind says, "To set up what you like against what you dislike, this is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of the way is not understood, peace of mind is disturbed to no purpose." Aiken says, this is talking about self-centered preferences and prejudices, judgments that relate to the me that exploits people and things. To apply this precept means to use the irritations, the likes and dislikes that arise in our minds as whetstones to practice and bring awareness to delusions. Aiken says, when there is a bit of self to defend, this is a violation of the precept. Rosetto, when we measure our well-being by the extent to which we maintain our requirements about the way we need to be or the world needs to be, then we are likely to be disappointed. When we or our world fails to meet our requirements, then there's a good chance we'll react out of anger. What makes anger self-indulgent is the fact that we use it and hold on to it to maintain our identity or dream of self. Blindly spinning in the thoughts and bodily sensations of the anger state is what is called indulging in anger. So how long are we going to punish others and ourselves for unwittingly not meeting our requirements? So here's some examples from my life of anger. This is from when I was a little girl, still through my teens and 20s, and I'm sharing this one because of the COVID-19 shortages. So when I was younger, I had very teeny ripples of irritation when a toilet paper roll fed off the bottom, not the top. I never said anything to anyone, I simply turned around the roll. My judging mind, though, would be peeved when the first sheet of toilet paper would be seamlessly adhered to the roll, and I'd spin the roll in vain, sinking an entranceway into what in the moment seemed so important to access. And my mind would say, if only everyone would put the roll on in the proper direction, I wouldn't be spinning the roll backwards and forwards to find out where it starts. I think of it now and I just laugh. I think it's just hilarious. Another peeve I have is when people make a left turn and they turn it short as if they're going to aim for my car. That still irritates me to this present day. I always have to say, just let it go. Here's an example from a sesshin. In the tea room, I was verbally asked, "So how are you doing?" I wrote on a slip of paper, "We're in noble silence." Or reply came, "Oh, but it's okay to talk in the communal tea room and check in how you're doing." I say to myself, "Really?" I glared inwardly. I said nothing out loud. I wrote nothing. Feeling indignation, I was triggered, that was my triggered feeling, by what I viewed as disregard for honoring noble silence, that was the event. I oozed into judging mind, that was my triggered thought, and broke the precept of do not indulge anger, that was my reaction. I had contrived reality for the self, this is self-indulgent anger, and I certainly was not honoring noble silence inwardly. Had I simply sensed my irritation at the disruption to, quote unquote, my silence, not gotten attached to it, not gone into judging mine, I simultaneously could have maintained noble silence and the precept. Aitken reminds us that this precept is a guide for practice. When we can turn the treacherous, quote, when we can turn the treacherous words in our ears into practice, then we can acknowledge the appearance of the avatar of the Buddha. Example is of this is when I was listening to Judging Mind during a different sesshin. Then in Sanzen, I felt a bit of a sting. Later, while I was walking alone in the clear starry evening, I heard within, "This Buddha receives only compassion from the chant of boundless compassion. This Buddha, the source of compassion, this Buddha receives only compassion." Ah, I said to myself, I am this Buddha. I receive only compassion. There was no sting. There was no judging mind. Irritation, preference, judgment all dropped, and I rested with ease and acceptance of what was. Bodhidharma and life-centered anger. Life-centered anger, life-centered anger might be in response with, quote, hot words and a fierce expression against a violation of common decency. In such an outcry, peace of mind is unmoved. In effect, you are saying, this is true, this is not true. The passion is the purity of the Tathagata coming forth, and the motive is the mercy of Kanzion. Quite some time ago, I received such an outcry from a wonderful teacher who boldly said to me, quote, "What does it take to get through to you?" unquote. The frustration expressed with compassionate intent to reach me conveyed tremendous energy. I still can recall the startled feeling I had, like a gentle earthquake, as veils of the time literally parted in a moment, allowing me to access the energy I needed to do deeper work. I'm very grateful for that moment and for that teacher for saying that. I also have shared such life-centered anger, in effect saying, "Stop it," that arose as a flash in response against violence toward another. The anger vanished just as quickly, no stickiness at all, not only stopping the abuser, but later having the person thank me. Let's move on to Dogen Zenji. And there's two different versions, slightly different versions. Not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is a boundless sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. Aitken has a slightly different translation. Not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is an ocean of bright clouds. There is an ocean of solemn clouds. So I'm going to go through this phrase by phrase. Not advancing, not retreating. To me, this means that I'm aware of the feelings and sensations as they arise, but I do not become ensnared by them. I feel them, perhaps dialogue with them, "Hey, what are you needing now?" But I don't enact them, advance, or deny or suppress them, retreat. It means not hanging out in story or using story to tweak myself into a hero or victim. And if I can trace the anger back to the original unmet need that's driving the anger, then I can respond to that need with more skillful, intimate ways, more complete acceptance, kindness, etc. Not real, not empty. O'Hara says, "The energy of our anger is like a strong wind. These are your feelings. Oh, these are our feelings, our responses to a trigger. And they are not real in the sense that they are constantly changing impulses that rise and fall. However, they are not empty in the sense that they do have an effect on us." There's an anonymous Chinese poem that is evocative of this. "When the wind blows through the bamboo grove, the trunks clatter against one another. When it has passed, the grove is quiet once more." continuing. There is a boundless sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds. Aiken words it this way. There is an ocean of bright clouds. There is an ocean of solemn clouds. Again, this precept is asking us to learn to relate to anger, not from anger. When I combine these two translations of Dogen's words, for me, bright clouds and solemn clouds are simply different ways of being for clouds. Example, gray and moody, fluffy white, stormy, radiantly golden, streaked, etc. When it rains, we put on a coat. When it's sunny, we take it off. We meet each moment as it is. Anger is like the clouds. It simply is. When it is appropriate to speak out in defense of someone or something, we use the potent energy of anger to do so. When our anger has been self-indulgent, we learn to let it pass through us as the wind blows through the clouds in the sky. We need access to the pure energy of compassionate anger to be creative, productive guardians of all life. For me, when I experience anger as a boundless sea of clouds, anger becomes a boundless Dharma gate. And when I enter the Dharma gate of anger with acceptance, intimacy, and genuine curiosity, I learn the dignity of anger in support of life. I access compassionate anger. These teachers may, and maybe Domio, may not agree with my understanding, but that's what it is for now. Aiken further explains the ocean of bright clouds and ocean of solemn clouds is an expression of one and the same emptiness. For ocean of bright clouds, Aiken, as the Diamond Sutra says, in effect, you come forth as the Tathagata when you come from your original dwelling place, emptiness itself. Anger and love are names for certain tendencies of energy. If you cannot feel anger at all, then you are blocking your own creativity. That needs correction. And to give an example of bright clouds, he gives a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. Treat your anger with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than yourself. Do not suppress it. Simply be aware of it. Awareness is like the sun. When it shines on things, they are transformed. When you are aware that you are angry, your anger is transformed. If you destroy anger, you destroy the Buddha, for Buddha and Mara are of the same essence. Mindfully dealing with anger is like taking the hand of a little brother. And then Aiken gives this example for solemn clouds, and it's a verse from William Blake. He says to change one word in this verse, intellect, to prajna. So I'm going to just read it as prajna. But just notice how similar they are. So this is the solemn clouds. Men are, by William Blake, men are admitted into heaven, not because they have curbed and governed their passions or have no passions, but because they have cultivated their understandings. The treasures of heaven are not negations of passion, but realities of prajna, from which all passions emanate, uncurbed in their eternal glory. So you can feel how ocean of clouds and ocean of solemn clouds are an expression of one and the same emptiness. And then just before I move on to compassionate anger, I want to share something else from the Chan Zen Buddhist master Zhao Zhou. He says, Buddhahood is passion, and passion is Buddhahood. Monk says to him, in whom does Buddha cause passion? Zhao Zhou, Buddha causes passion in all of us. Monk, how do we get rid of it? Zhao Zhou, why should we get rid of it? So now, compassionate anger, or life-centered anger. Rossetto, quote, When anger's energy is life-centered, it can alert us to situations that go against our deepest sense of what serves life, our lives, the lives of others. And when we do pay attention, the open, free flame transforms into a powerful energy that can ignite skillful action that responds to circumstances as they truly present themselves in the present time. Anger can also be a signal that alerts us to how we may be mistreated. It can shine the light beam on unacceptable abusive situations. It can be a gift, a wake-up call that triggers us to remove ourselves from the situation. But many people who have covered or ignored their anger may not experience anger at all. And by blaming themselves or having some other misconceived notion, they may remain in abusive situations. Self-indulgent anger, unquote. Self-indulgent anger can become legitimized in groups. Rosetto again. Today we see a great deal of group hatred that takes the form of religious, ethnic, political, and ideological differences. What draws people together to take group action out of anger is each individual person's anger. This group may serve as a container for the individual's anger, but it does not create it. That comes from the individual. An individual's fear, hopelessness, powerlessness, and so forth get recognition within a larger group. The individual's reactions to those experiences are generalized and legitimized, at least within the group, and any hope of self-inquiry is lost, unquote. When we see so much deprivation, neglect, abuse, loss, slaughter of innocence, and what seems to be flagrant violation of the basic needs for all life, we need to be able to access our compassionate anger to act on behalf of those who are suffering. How do we respond with compassion, not hatred, when we are witnesses to atrocities here in our own country or halfway around the globe, where we do not meet face to face to those who are being harmed? We need to cultivate equanimity so that we can constructively access compassionate anger. O'Hara, quote, "I send my compassion to both sides, my sense of the horror, fear, and anger on both sides. If there were an action I could take, such as when people go and meet with those involved, that's different. You meet with people on both sides, and there is healing. But when you're sitting in your living room reading the Times and you become angry, try to ask yourself, what is that? What is that feeling? What is that anger that's arising? What is the value you feel that is being threatened? Look at that. Try to raise that up, and it will shift from this kind of hatred to, oh, this is something I really care about. A kind of affirmation of what you care about, such as fairness, compassion, and justice. Then, possibly you'll find a way to act on it. Sometimes, however, when the hurt is so deep or the violation heinous, the work of breaking down our internal hatred requires even stronger measures. Bernie Glassman said, we have to take the hatred out of our hearts, put it on our altars, and take really good care of it. By putting it on our altars, we bring our wrath and need into our consciousness, and we nourish what has been defiled. In the case of the Holocaust, and I would hear any acts of genocide or any atrocities, we recognize that our need for humanity and compassion and caring were horribly violated, and that we must care for these needs so that we don't turn toward violence and hatred. Whether your altar is within your mind or actually in your room, you can use this as a way to feel those parts of yourself that need safety, compassion, respect, and care. So how do we cultivate equanimity? And here I'm interweaving myself with O'Hara, Rosetto, and Gilka Cole-Carlson. How do we let go of the desire and attachment to escape for what we're experiencing in the present moment? How do we accept what we have, what's alive in the present moment, instead of focusing on what we want? How do we learn to be with ourselves moment to moment, honestly, without shame or fear? How do we feel safe enough to let things fall apart and release our need to fix ourselves and others? How do we plunge into vulnerability? How does the idea of what I want melt into the moment I have? Paraphrasing Gyokoko, we ask, Is it all right that? Is it all right to be embarrassed, neurotic, deaf to good music, poor at science? Is it all right to feel inadequate, better than, lonely, bad, vulnerable, confused, angry? Complaining does not equal improvement. Is it all right to lose your equanimity? Yes. Accept your humanity with kindness and compassion. Is it all right to be you? Is it all right for the other person to be him, herself, their selves? Deeply accept that you are human without judgment. So just how do we cultivate equanimity? Our mind, this next part is a lot from my own experience as well, but our minds want to be solution finders. So keep your attention on not trying to solve anything, but to allow ourselves to allow awareness of what kind of thinking triggers anger reactions. Just keep coming back to stillness. Simply scanning our bodies and observing areas of held tension will allow them to soften. Open your hands, unclench your fists, spread your toes, take deep breaths, and exhale. Smile. Become curious about what triggers your anger, what buttons are pushed. Track the events or situations and your reactions. Initially, you're simply accepting that you do have anger, that you do get a momentary sense of satisfaction or power when you express anger. You do have momentary outbursts of madness. Or perhaps you'll discover you cower away from anger or deny you have anger even in the face of abuse. Initially, you're simply accepting the presence of anger without any need to escape or hide under a veneer of perfection or justification. You also notice if you identify synonymously with anger. So typically, you'll notice there is an event, it could be a situation, a comment, whatever, and what follows are triggers, a feeling, and a story. And then the fourth is a reaction. With curious observation, this shifts to event, feeling, examine story, chosen response. I can't change the event, and I can't change the feeling that has already arisen in a response. With intention and attention, I can examine the truth of the story that has been triggered and choose my response. I've learned in a search for meaning not to ask why, which leaves me feeling victimized. Instead, I ask, what's the lesson for me here? And rise to the draw of creation. With curiosity, kindness, and deep acceptance, I observe and experience anew what's arising now in this moment. I observe the feeling, sensation as best as I can without judgment. If a story arises, I remain curious about the story, follow its clues back to the original unmet needs that led to its conception. Maybe the unmet needs have to do with protection, acceptance, belonging, community, visibility, empathy, compassion, strength, confidence, whatever. How can I meet those needs now? In this moment, I am the one to meet those needs or to discern the most life-centered way to do so. Rizzetto, once you more frequently notice your reactions, it is important to allow their presence in open awareness. So if judgmental thoughts arise, you can just repeat them to yourself and move on. Having a thought that I'm still getting angry over, blah, 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 or I don't feel anything and I should. What begins to emerge over time is an understanding of the ways in which we indulge our anger. Sometimes people will say they know that they are angry but don't have a feeling in their body. Be patient. It takes time for the mind to connect the thoughts with the body, especially if our style is to spin in our thoughts. Ask yourself, other than thoughts, what other signals are there that I'm angry? The question is an invitation to feel. You may begin to notice tightening in certain areas of the body or breath holding. Try to rest in the experience of just this. In time, you will notice whatever you experience is just a passing wave of energy. The key is to allow. Don't try to change it, manipulate it, or get rid of it. Sometimes we come to recognize an experience of anger that is not event-oriented, but rather a subtle simmer that appears to be ever-present. And sometimes it might even arise as more than a subtle simmer. So an example for me, I think it was like 7, 10 days ago, I'm not sure, but when I awoke in the morning, I could feel all this pulsing of energy. I mean, it was just, I was just throbbing. And so while I was meditating, I felt it, and it was, sure felt like rage was in there. And so I just sat with it. And I'm trying to remember. I think I asked myself, what's up? I don't know. But what my response was, I want to kill everyone. And I said, really? Yeah, I want to kill everyone and everything. You really want to kill everything? And then, so I accepted the anger. I didn't argue it. I just said, okay, let's go with this. And our response was, well, no, I don't want to kill the animals, any of the animals or plants. I said, okay. So how are you going to do this? Can you really imagine yourself disemboweling somebody? No, I can't really do that. I can't really imagine that. So I just kept dialoguing like this. And I knew where this was coming from. Me as a very, very little person. And in that moment, she just knew it was okay to have that rage. It was okay. And it just dissipated just like that. It was just totally a safe space. And later that morning, I went for like a 2-hour walk, and I had more clarity on that walk than I've had for quite some time. So I'm going to just end there because I'm almost out of time anyway. Sorry I talked so long. And we'll skip my haikus that I wrote. I wrote about 3 haikus about anger.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, I might share one.
Yes.
To go with the, you know, the how great the robe of liberation. So I wrote, how bleak the veil of agitation, a petrified field of annihilation, shrouding ourselves in illusions teaching, we shred all living beings. I was having fun with anger. I'm open if anyone wants to say anything. If not, we just sit here.
Thank you, Yashi, for a very lovely presentation. It was great.
You're welcome.
If anybody wants to say anything, just please unmute yourself and go ahead.
I had a question. So Yashay, when you were at the session and that person was speaking to you, what would be the alternative to how you responded? Because you weren't obligated to break your silence for that person.
No, I didn't break my silence. But the issue was that I was angry, my anger arose that this person was trying to engage me in conversation. And if I had just noticed, she wants to talk, I'm in noble silence, and just let that anger, it arises, it's an irritation, but not hang on to it. I hung on to it. It was self-indulgent, because now I'm pissed off at her for trying to get me to talk. So I broke the precept of not being angry, and my head was chattering, so I wasn't in noble silence inside my head. So the alternative way of handling it would say, she wants to talk. That's annoying to me. Oh, well, I'm just going to let it go.
Okay. Yeah, because I tend to obligate the other person. Like, meet their expectations rather than there to be a conflict. So I was just curious what you thought the like third option would be, is just to still be silent, but there's no reason to indulge the anger about it.
I'm not, are you saying something or are you asking a question? I'm not clear.
I think she would
I guess that, yeah, I was just saying that I was wondering what the third option was, and it sounds like the third option is still, you still stay in silence, you just don't indulge the anger.
Yeah, I did stay in silence the whole time. I never verbally said anything.
Yeah.
Janelle, I like that the third option. That is something that Kyogen would often use.
Mm.
A lot of times that reminds me of the kind of advancing, not retreating. You know, it's like we usually see a dualistic option. Either I have to fight and go into conflict, or I just have to, you know.
Fully acquiesce, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what's a third option? So in a way that leaves it very open.
So I guess for me, the third option was letting that anger go through me. Maybe I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to me also, there's an option of recognizing that the present moment, more times than not, is not about me. I mean, that situation was really about that person. And I was the one standing there. It could have been somebody else.
Thank you for your talk. Yeshe, it's great, really comprehensive, lots to think about, really thought-provoking. Thank you.
Welcome. I was just thinking, I guess there's another option to this Ishin thing, in that I could have just started engaged in the conversation and just said, yeah, I want to talk now. I'm going to just talk now and forget about this noble silence stuff. It's like, hallelujah, someone's going to talk to me. Finally.
Well, I've struggled a lot with anger. Not it doesn't tend to be the really simmering, long, bitter kind of stuff, but I think I've shared this story before, but if I argue with it or judge it or try to squelch it or talk myself out of it, any of those things, none of that works at all. It's kind of like arguing with a 2-year-old, right? I mean, it's just not going to happen. So I started to, like, one day I just had this thought of, like, when this kind of rage erupts, usually about just some silly thing, that I just, like, kind of went like this and held myself and just, like, really turned toward it with that sympathy and just was with it. And I recognized, like, I'm that happens when I'm really stressed and overwhelmed. I'm you know, there was, I got in touch with that fragile piece that was like, wah! And so now that it's really changed my relationship to it, because I recognize, you know, I'm starting to get judgmental about this, like, oh, how ridiculous, you're angry about this thing, and, you know, and I realized, no, I'm feeling, you know, vulnerable and fragile and stressed. And that's not like, it doesn't have to be a rational thing, right? You just are feeling that way. There you go. Yeah, just that kind of recognition is what lets it move through. Well, I just took us over nine. So anyway, thank you very much, Yeshe, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Yeshe. It was really great.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here.
See you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.